Peter B. Collins, News and Comment, Friday, August 2nd, 2013. Some of the disclosures from NSA whistleblower Russell Tice, first heard right here, have made it into the mainstream media. Tice is no longer on ICE. Also today, we've got an update on the proceedings in the Bradley Manning court-martial at the sentencing phase now. From Fort Meade, Maryland, that's coming up here in just a moment. But first, to the NSA story. I have known that 10 days ago, Russ Tice and Bill Binney, NSA whistleblowers who've both been interviewed on this program, sat for an interview for the PBS NewsHour. And the day of the interview, I got an email from Tice telling me to expect to see it that night on television. And it didn't happen that night or the next night. I checked in with Russ three times in the interim, and he got different stories about when it was actually going to air. And I will credit PBS with the fact that they actually did run parts of the interview with Russ Tice and Bill Binney. I will also credit them that they put up the full interview, the unedited piece with Tice and Binney, as well as the full unedited interview with Joel Brenner, who was sent by the NSA to try to knock down both the charges and the credibility of Russ Tice. And so this whole thing was, whether you call it news product or journalism, was an ugly mess. It was very badly edited. Judy Woodruff appeared more nervous than I have ever seen her as she anchored these segments. And they didn't even bother to do something that often happens in television, which is when you tape pieces of a segment at different times, you wear the same outfit. You can understand that, right? That way when it's all edited together, it looks like it was all done at one time. Judy Woodruff sported three different outfits over the course of a roughly 9-minute segment that aired on the PBS NewsHour. Now, I'm pleased for Russ Tice because his critical allegations that the NSA has been collecting everything, emails, telephone calls, yes, recording phone calls, not just the metadata, PBS broadcast those charges. As I say, it was badly edited and it was jumpy in some ways. The other thing I'll give them credit for is putting the unedited interviews up on their website. Now, 98% of PBS viewers will never go to the website, never take the time to look at these interviews and compare Judy's outfits and notice how nervous she is and all those things. But it was a remarkable package that they broadcast. And it's very clear that they are subject to intense pressure inside the beltway there. It's also very clear that they bent over backwards to favor the NSA and its point of view in putting together this broadcast. Now, what you're about to hear are the comments of Joel Brenner. Joel Brenner, it's important to stress the former part. He is a former Inspector General of the NSA, still a full-throated apologist for it. And that's a curious role because the Inspector General was supposed to be independent and not be a defender of the agency, a defender of the Constitution and the laws that govern the operations of the NSA. But we'll put that aside. They sent Joel Brenner in there as a hitman to undermine particularly Russ Tice and secondarily Bill Binney. So I'm going to stop the recording here a couple of times to comment in between, but here is Judy Woodruff talking to Joel Brenner.
Joel Brenner, thank you for talking with us.
Pleasure.
So when it comes to Edward Snowden's revelations and disclosures, what do you make of those? Is the NSA overreaching, or is it doing what it's supposed to do?
Well, I don't think you can reasonably say NSA is overreaching. You could ask whether the Congress was right when it passed Section 215 of the Patriot Act You could ask whether the FISA court was right when it interpreted the act in a way that let NSA collect all the metadata that it's been collecting. But it's really important to understand that NSA hasn't done anything, as I understand it and from all I know, that goes one inch beyond what it's been authorized to do by a court.
Now this is quite a non-denial denial. Did you hear the weasel words in there, "from everything I know and have been told"? Well, that's his out. So disregard anything that came before or after that, because it is a qualified denial. And that's what we're going to get more of from Joel Brenner. And to an average person, these denials probably carry some weight. But he's referring to the FISA court, and I don't need to remind you what a kangaroo court that is. It's not an adversarial proceeding. It approves every warrant that is requested of it. And it's a joke. Also, to claim that the NSA has not operated one inch beyond the boundaries set by Congress and the courts, that is flatly untrue. And the comments of Ed Snowden, the disclosures of Russ Tice, clearly contradict that. We'll continue here.
Can you be confident of that?
I'm not privy any longer to what goes on inside of Fort Meade at the agency. But I know how the place works.
Now I want you to listen very carefully to that statement, because in just a moment, he's going to attack Russ Tice and Bill Binney because they haven't been at the agency, respectively, for, 12 and 7 years. And so he says they don't know diddly. But he knows a lot, even though he freely admits that he left 2 years ago.
And I know that based on the revelations that we know that have come out, nothing it has done has violated any of those orders. And that's an important thing to focus on, because the agency, you could complain about that you don't like the fact that this information is being collected, but it's not NSA that decided to collect it.
So tell us, how extensive is the NSA's?
Let's be fair about that. NSA collected it. They did it illegally right after 9/11 when they moved into the domestic arena. That was what was euphemized as warrantless wiretapping. And then they papered over that, and the FISA Reform Act of 2008 essentially legalized the illegal actions that had occurred before. So this dissembling is remarkable.
A collection of data on American citizens, on their phone calls, on their emails, on their use of the Internet.
This is, the program only involves telephony metadata.
Okay, so listen carefully. He is now answering the question by narrowing the focus. He's talking about the program, and he appears to be referring to the phone records collection program. That doesn't include PRISM. That doesn't include the other interception and collection efforts that they have. And this is the way they claim to be telling the truth as they spew flat-out falsehoods.
Not emails. Not geographic location information. The idea that NSA is keeping files on Americans as a general rule just isn't true.
Okay. Now, what's coming next is a very important denial from the NSA, and it gets to the heart of what I have been discussing with Russell Tice on this podcast, and I don't want to inflate my ego here or my importance, but what this man, Joel Brenner, is about to say is an answer to a question that wasn't asked, and to my knowledge, it is based on the assertions and the commentary that Russ Tice and I have made in our conversations that the collection of information on elected leaders presents the possibility that the NSA could be blackmailing our elected leaders with the dirt it has collected. So listen as he flatly denies that, even though no one has raised it. And I went back and carefully listened to the entire interview of Binney and Tice for PBS, and Tice didn't suggest blackmail or mention J. Edgar Hoover or those kind of allusions in his comments. So here comes the denial. It's a talking point that Joel Brenner clearly rehearsed and scripted as he delivered it. Here you go.
No basis for believing that. The NSA is collecting the metadata, and I don't want to play that down. I don't want to suggest that that's not important. Big data and the growth of it, the uncontrollable growth of it, in the private sector as well as the government, is a huge issue in modern life, and it ought to be discussed publicly. That's a good thing. But the idea that NSA is compiling dossiers on people the way J. Edgar Hoover did in the 40s and 50s.
60s and 70s, don't forget.
The police did, as some people allege. That's just not true.
Well, so there you have. I think that is the money shot, the money quote. That is what Joel Brenner was sent to PBS to say. And I think this is something that that I regard as very important. As you know, I've been hammering away at the revelation from Tice that people like Dianne Feinstein and other top elected officials, those who were supposed to oversee the NSA, have been subjects of its surveillance programs. I happen to think this is more important than PRISM, than even the phone records collection case, because it gets to the heart of the NSA's power and the potential lock it has over our leadership in Washington, right up to and including the President of the United States. And so this is a comment that I believe was floated in a form of inoculation to get the denial out there before the charge that's coming from me and Russ Tice, and that I've been trying to get the corporate media to pick up. You won't believe the amount of effort I've put into feeding the Tice interview to reporters and begging them to ask Dianne Feinstein if she knows she's been wiretapped. So time will tell. And I think it's going to be very interesting because as of today, Congress starts a 5-week recess. And this becomes the silly season sometimes. You know, when the Ground Zero mosque hyped controversy was developed, that was in August. And so I am really curious what's going to happen this August. And with the Snowden-fueled revelations, with what Russ Tice has courageously gone public with, and now PBS has finally broadcast, the first mainstream outlet to do so, I consider this extremely critical. And I hope you'll watch, and we'll watch together and see if this develops the way I think it should. I'm grateful to the people who support this podcast through setting up subscriptions. You can do it too. In fact, over a nice weekend like this, just drop by peterbcollins.com. And under my picture in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, there's a link that says sign up. Just follow that and you can set up a subscription in minutes. $5 a month, cancel anytime, or the best deal, $50 a year. That's our annual subscription. And if you're a new subscriber to the annual level, I've got a bag of Kona coffee, this great-smelling bag of fresh beans from Russ in Hawaii. I'll send that along with Sibel Edmonds' Classified Woman book and my thanks for your support. The other way you can support our program is to send your web business to GoDaddy.com. They've got the best deals on domain name registration and web hosting. As you know, I've been doing business with them for more than 10 years. They've got great service there, customer service. And have you heard about the screaming deal? You can get web hosting with unlimited storage and bandwidth starting at just $1.99 a month with a free domain name thrown in. To get a special deal that also supports the Peter B. Collins Show, follow the GoDaddy link in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. And today's link gets you an extra 10% off of web hosting fees at GoDaddy.com. Well, today we released another recap, an in-depth interview with Kevin Gostola, who's been live blogging the Bradley Manning court-martial proceedings at Fort Meade, Maryland. And in our conversation today, we recap the verdict that was delivered earlier this week, some of the kind of off-camera skirmishes with the courtroom artist who was banned from Fort Meade, and we learn a little bit more about that. But Kevin also takes us through the first stage of the sentencing phase of the trial. And since Manning admitted back in February that he was the WikiLeaker, this really is the focus of what the convictions will mean in terms of how long he will end up in prison. And what we're seeing is a really sorry effort by the prosecution to use innuendo and speculation to try to paint the picture that these leaks caused significant, measurable, negative damage. And they are stretching the truth, they're using emotional arguments, and there is secret testimony that we don't even know about, where they can say things that are considered classified, and the judge gets to hear them, but we will never know them. So that makes this a very one-sided and potentially unfair proceeding. Here's an excerpt from today's update from Kevin Gostola on the Manning trial.
Carr even said that he had no individual that he could specifically tie to Bradley Manning's release and say that person was killed. There were 900 names in the Afghanistan war logs of people who were exposed. Unfortunately for Bradley Manning, the judge is probably going to factor that into a sentence. But important were, it seems, they're not dead because of that. Many of those people were already dead by the time the war logs were released. This was really incredible to sit in the court and hear this, by the way. I wrote it up as I heard it, basically. The prosecutor asked Carr to talk about the person, any persons who had died. He named this individual. He said it was an Afghan national. The Taliban had said that they killed him because of the WikiLeaks publication of information. And then the defense interrupted and objected and said, we don't believe this person's name was in the information. Well, the judge said, is that true? Is it correct that this person wasn't in the information? And he said, no, I don't know that person was in the information. It's just what the Taliban said. Because the Taliban aren't stupid. They know how to push the United States buttons. Mm-hmm. So they were manipulating the United States and probably doing a pretty good job. And so then she said later that she was going to disregard this testimony completely because obviously it has nothing to do with the crime that Bradley Manning has been convicted of committing. It should factor zero into anything she decides. And so this is the critical issue, the speculation, the fabricating of harm.
You can hear the full report with Kevin Gostola. It's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com. And I want to mention, I got a thoughtful email from Australia from our listener Hamish, who heard my interview about the Bradley Manning verdict with Colonel Morris Davis, the former Guantanamo prosecutor. And Hamish made a good point, and I'm going to share it with you. He said, in your recent interview with Davis, he made a number of cogent points regarding the court-martial of Private Manning. However, he neglected in his reference to his own and Manning's various oaths in connection with their service to note another and a more important matter, which indeed seems to have disappeared entirely from view, namely, the requirement under the relevant provisions of the U.S. Army Field Manual to report violations of the laws of war, that the U.S. repeatedly and spectacularly violated those laws in the course of the Iraq War is beyond question, and that Manning complied with his duty in reporting such violations seems equally clear, at least to a simple linguist such as myself, Hamish says. So, Hamish, you made a very important point here. And I'll read your last line. I was surprised, and if I may respectfully say so, disappointed that you didn't press the above point on Colonel Davis. You're right, and I accept the criticism. The State Department has issued a worldwide travel alert to American citizens warning of potential for terrorist attacks, particularly in the Middle East and North Africa, allegedly carried out by operatives of Al-Qaeda and their associates. This is considered to be an active alert based on credible information that a Qaeda attack or an Al-Qaeda group might be plotting an attack sometime in the coming days. Now, I'm reporting to this to you, and I think everybody deserves to know it. But because the boy has cried wolf so many times before, because we are in this bizarre scene where we're starting to peel back the layers of secrecy, and fundamentally, we can't trust our government, When I first saw this, I said, oh, are they going to bring back the color codes and should we go directly to orange? And so I'll stop right there. And we'll check back in a few days or next week and see if these warnings had any basis. And certainly if our government has active intelligence about something like this, I would rather that they reveal that than keep it secret. But it is hard to trust the government with information like this under the current climate. John Kerry, on Friday, drew criticism, well-deserved, from the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. They criticized him for saying this. It was a comment to Pakistan's GOTV yesterday. Regarding Egypt, the military was asked to intervene by millions and millions of people, all of whom were afraid of a descent into chaos, into violence. And the military did not take over, to the best of our judgment, so far. But he claims that they restored democracy. And that's an insult. It really is. Because I can understand the way our government is trying to avoid calling the coup a coup. Because if they do, they have to cut off military aid to the generals. They support the generals in this coup. It is not democratic. The experiment in democracy occurred over a year ago when Morsi was elected and the generals permitted him to take office. And the fact that the American administration isn't comfortable with Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood, there's been a lot of criticism of that from the right. It doesn't change that. And the idea that there were millions of people protesting against the Morsi government and that the generals stepped in to restore democracy? I mean, that's bullshit. And yet John Kerry delivers that line with a straight face in Pakistan. More than 300 people have died since Morsi was overthrown. And there could be a clearing of Tahrir Square and other protest zones of Morsi supporters underway right now or in the next few days. We'll keep an eye on it. A couple of quickies. The United States Senate, part of the Do-Nothing Congress, actually did something. They confirmed Samantha Power as the new ambassador to the United Nations, 87-10. She had to backpedal on comments she had previously made about U.S. relations with Israel and our blind support for the most extreme policies of the Israeli government. And maybe she'll return to her senses now that she is confirmed. We also saw the narrow confirmation vote of 53-42 for a permanent leader of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Now, it used to just be the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They remodeled it and pushed it into the Department of Homeland Security and required Senate confirmation for the head of the ATF&E. Only Republicans have refused to confirm someone to that post as a way of undermining any kind of gun control efforts by the ATF. So it is a signal accomplishment of the Democrats in the Senate and to a lesser extent the Obama White House that B. Todd Jones was confirmed. And he's been cleaning house over at ATF. He demoted some people who were involved in the Fast and Furious scandal. And I don't know much about this guy, but he hails from my hometown of Cincinnati. And he left, like me, so he can't be all bad. The Guardian newspaper reports on a number of the efforts to rein in the NSA through legislation that would reform it. And I've talked about my fear that we're going to have window dressing reform, where they go through the motions, but the same level of spying continues. And Rush Holt, who is a former rocket scientist from Princeton and a member of Congress from New Jersey, I believe he's running in the special election to replace Senator Lautenberg and is likely to lose. And I haven't agreed with Rush Holt on many issues. He's been a critic of Bradley Manning. He carried a bill to try to clean up the election process in this country that actually made things worse. But today I praise Rush Holt because he is sponsoring legislation to fully repeal the Patriot Act, and the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. Not just to amend them, not just to fix Section 215, but to fully repeal both of these bad laws. And I've been critical because it's been Republicans who have been sponsoring, for example, the Amash Amendment. Well, this is something that deserves special praise. A Democrat, Rush Holt, is carrying legislation to fully repeal the Patriot Act and the FISA law. That's what we need. And I appeal to my other Cincinnati buddy, John Merlo Boehner, because he recently dropped that he believes his role is to repeal laws, that his do-nothing House of Representatives doesn't need to pass bills, that they score more points when they repeal Obamacare over and over again. Well, Boehner, show me your skills at repealing laws and apply it to something worthwhile for a change. I'd love to see repeal of the Patriot Act and the FISA law. And finally today, I've talked to you about the city of Oakland across the bay from me, out-of-control police department, rampant crime rate, murder rate, unemployment, poverty. It's a very tough scene. And this week, the city council voted to accept a $2 million federal grant to set up a Big Brother system, a domain awareness center that'll merge all of the public surveillance cameras with the private surveillance cameras, with gunshot detection system, alarm systems, Twitter feeds. And it is a really ugly development. And Chip Johnson, who is a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, an African-American who lives in Oakland, wrote a column today that just infuriates me, because he recaps these developments and the vote of the city council 6-0 to do this. And he closed his column this way: "As an Oakland resident, I have no problem with Big Brother watching over me. In a city with random violence like this, I'm glad someone is. To me, it's like an angel on my shoulder. I have no expectation of privacy on a public street. If I drop my trousers and boogie down Broadway screaming bloody murder, I expect a couple of people are going to witness it, record it, and I'll likely end up on YouTube. I don't believe security cameras are acceptable substitutes for police officers or solid criminal investigations, but they certainly aid both and serve as force multipliers in a city in dire need of a large police presence in the community." Well, Chip, you're wrong. Number one, sacrificing your privacy for this level of safety with a police department that has been off the rails for more than 10 years means that you could be framed by a surveillance video. You can't just believe that these cameras and all this surveillance will be used in a clean, transparent way. And for you to say that you have no expectation of privacy on a public street, and that this super surveillance system is like an angel on your shoulder? Wow. It's amazing how people buy in to the police state in this country. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. This podcast is free, and you are free to pass it around all over the world. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until